ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवत गीता as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 4, text 2, very well known verse. Evaṁ parampara praptam imam rajashayo viduhu sakale neha mahatā yogo nashtah parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time this succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord Himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore He declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English as it is received by the Parampara, disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. In this verse, Lord Krishna speaks about parampara, which literally means succession. When we speak about parampara in terms of Vedic philosophy of culture, we refer to a disciplic succession, or it is... that's the translation Srila Prabhupada gives. Often scholars translate it as tradition. So this concept of parampara and similar term sampradaya is very important in Vedic culture. They're very similar concepts. Sampradaya is maintained by parampara. Sampradaya means... Sam means fully. Pra also gives the sense of fully or properly. Da means that which gives. So that which fully and gives the real thing or the proper thing or properly gives. So the idea of tradition, that's very important in any traditional culture. We have all over the world now non-traditional cultures with the advent of the Industrial Revolution, then the whole way of life of people who got under its steamroller changed, and all traditional usages were changed. Yes, sampradaya, that gives the idea of a of a thought system, whereas there is some difference, whereas parampara gives more the idea of a whole body of activity and practices that come from the parampara. So in the Western countries, they have the idea of tradition, but it's not connected so much like this with parampara. It's, for a start, most of the tradition is not religious, or if it's religious, it's mostly only the practice, like carrying a statue of a saint around with lamps, but they don't really have any philosophical understanding of why they should be doing that. So there are many traditions also here in India. Many traditions are going on, like celebrating Pongal, or what then special food is given on that day, and some people, well, Deepavali, and most people have no idea why light should be lit, but it's just done. So when the understanding why gets separated from what's being done, then the reason why it's done is lost, and then there's not really that much point in doing it. If you just light lights because everyone else does it and you feel good, then the whole point of welcoming Ramachandra Bhagavan back to Ayodhya, if you're a Rama Bhakta, that's lost. And then there's no bhakti. And it's good to keep our tradition, but why? What for? So Krishna saw that the essence is missing. I mean, at that time there was so much Vedic parampara was going on. But the essence is missing. It's not exactly the tradition in and of itself that is important, but it's the what is the truth? That's the tradition is founded on the search for truth, atato brahma jignasa, and then different acharyas will explain what is that brahma. Actually, that's already there in Shastra. Krishna is param brahma, king tad brahma kim adhyatma, yato va imani bhutani jayante, etc. Tad vijyasasva, tad brahmeti. So what it is already there, but there are different interpretations in the Vedic tradition. So there are Vedic paramparas. There are also non-Vedic paramparas. Okay, there is Buddhism, Jainism, and different paramparas within Buddhism and Jainism. The general understanding is that you have to follow the acharya. All the Vedic paramparas will base their understanding on Shastra. Otherwise, there's no basis. But how to understand it, that's understood through an acharya who explains it. And we'll find that the explanations of Shankara, for instance, are very different from those of the Vaishnava acharyas. Although they both claim to follow the same Shastra. And they both accept that Narayana is the origin of their sampradaya. But they have very different conclusions. So this study of the Vedas, it can be very complex. We find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was to discuss Vedanta with the Mayavadis of Varanasi, he told them that my guru, he told me that what did he tell me? That murka tumi tomar nahik Vedanta dika. That you're simply a fool. You have no eligibility to study Vedanta. So to study Vedanta means to understand the truth, but if most people can't get it, then what's left? Well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also told, Krishna mantra japa sada e mantra sha. You just chant the name of Krishna. That's the essence of everything. But then how to establish that's the essence? Well, someone say, no, it's not the essence of everything. Come on, look at Shastra. He said, you're supposed to be following Shastra. Then it's just blind faith. And for many people, they may not be able to enter into all the complexities of understanding. Therefore, what we actually find is that we tend to follow, well, Ramanuja said it. Okay, that's what we follow. Prabhupada said it. That's what we follow. But all the acharyas, they won't just say something, they'll give backup for it. It's like Ramanuja might have seen that his time that he was going against all tradition. What's this? All of a sudden, this Vishnu Bhakti. Where did all this come from? But he went to great lengths to say that no, this is not something new. This is what is in Shastra. This is what Shastra says. So all the acharyas, they will establish their position on the basis of Shastra. Otherwise, they have no position. There's no position. But at the same time, many of the followers, they may not understand all the intricacies, and so for them, among themselves, it's sufficient to say, well, Ramanuja said, Madhva said, or they may have someone completely bogus also. People tend to follow their guru, but they don't know why. But then the guru is meant to teach you why. Don't just do what I say, just understand why. But every little detail, it may not be possible to go into in great detail. So, just like one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, he was a hippie, long hair. If you look in the dictionary definition of hippie, then long hair will come for men. So one devotee, he was supposed to be initiated, and then he had long hair. Prabhupada wanted him to shave his head. He said, well, Lord Chaitanya Manisagras had long hair. Advaita Acharya had long hair. Krishna had long hair. Advaita Acharya. Then Jesus, he also had long hair, so why do I have to shave my head? And Prabhupada said, because now you're following me. So what's the basis of that? Well, Prabhupada wanted it like that, and that's all. We may not go into great detail of dig out all the Shastras, go searching in Kashmir, and from Kashmir to Kanyakumari, different Dharma Shastras, and they said, Prabhupada said, okay, all right, that's enough for us. If we're to explain outside, then we may have to give some more reason, although Srila Prabhupada is often asked about shaving heads, and he didn't get into a big philosophical discussion. He said it's clean, that's all. It's very clean. And as we saw in the drama, Sita and others, they're not used to having wigs on, so they're always having to pull the hair out of their eyes. Isn't it? Ramachandra, Sita, it's troublesome to have the hair in your eye. So they're always pulling that way. When your head's shaved, you don't have to bother. No botheration. Can be Krishna conscious instead of hair conscious. So, we follow the acharya, but there may be a problem with that. Is that then it becomes blind following. And people don't understand why they're following. They don't think it's important to understand why. Our guru said, okay, that's enough. And then different people understand it in different ways. And you get all kinds of different ideas coming out, and then how to resolve it, then ultimately we have to go back to Shastra. And there may be some latitude also, I mean some allowance that different followers of the acharyas, they give somewhat different practice or maybe somewhat even different understanding. That's also acceptable because within Vedic culture, there are different gurus, and they may be all members of the same sampradaya, but you can't expect everyone to understand in exactly the same way. And even within, at least Gaudiya culture, it's understood that everyone has an individual relationship with the Supreme Lord, so their understanding may be somewhat different. And how a devotee who is his own inclination is to follow the gopis who are lovers of Krishna, how he will instruct his followers at the higher level will be different to those whose inclination is to follow gopis like Yashoda, who have a parental relationship. So that's at a more high level. At a lower level, or at the basic level, we may say that, well, one guru is very much inclined to do a lot of deity worship, and another is very little interest in deity worship, but is very much interested in Harinam. And so some differences will be there, some latitude is there. That's within the sampradaya, within the parampara. But then if the philosophy is wrong, or if the practice is not consonant with the teachings of the acharya, then it has to be said that the parampara is broken. Just like, or that there may be differences of opinion over that also. Just like you'll find some Gauriya Vaishnavas, they may, or people who claim to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they may be men who dress in saris and thinking, helps me to think of myself more like a gopi. But other followers of the sampradaya will accept that this. This is not acceptable. So although Krishna is saying here that I'm going to re-establish the parampara, it's not just a matter of, okay, there's no acharya. Okay, appoint someone as an acharya and get a few disciples. They teach them how to put on their tilak properly, and we put all the traditions back. But that's not the essence. The essence is, what is the truth? Without that, the parampara is useless anyway. You can have very good parampara, but in terms of external practices, mats and ashrams, but if the siddhanta is wrong, then everything's wrong. And so there's no point in having it anyway, which is why we find in the Vedic tradition, on one hand, because there are so many paramparas and sub-paramparas, socially there's a lot of tolerance, like we see in the Western world at the present time. It used to be just, you have to be a Christian, otherwise you're not acceptable to be another. Jews were hated. And then you have to be a Protestant if you're in a Protestant country. You have to be a Catholic, and they're fighting amongst each other. But with so many different, in the modern world, with so many different religious groups and non-religious groups and different ideas coming together, and the whole enlightenment kitchery, then there's an idea, well, we have to just live and let live, because otherwise we can't live at all. If you have the idea, our way is the only way and everyone else is doomed, then you get, just like now there's been bombings in Boston by what we would call fundamentalist religionists who think that this is the only way. But you can't organize a cosmopolitan society like that. So there has to be live and let live. And that was the atmosphere of India socially. But philosophically, there was a lot of debate with the idea that, okay, you have your parampara, but what's the philosophy? What's the basis? And the idea is that if someone is defeated in debate, then that person, along with all their disciples, should surrender and become the disciple of the person who defeated him. Because the point is not simply to follow a parampara because you happen to be in one, but to understand the truth. And that is the essence. We see that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was After he'd spoken with the Mayavadis of Varanasi, they admitted that actually you're right, and actually we're in this sampradaya, but we had a feeling that it wasn't really right, but just anyway we're in it because we're in it, and you know, it's a tradition and we're all doing it and it's respected, but actually we always thought it felt a bit funny. So I'm paraphrasing here. So they were willing. Of course, there's a lot of prestige involved in that also. Say if you're the head of a big following, and you're learned and respected for your learning, you're famous as a saint, and you come in a long tradition, and someone comes and defeats you, and you have to just say, actually, all I was doing was wrong, and all the people I was misleading them because I didn't have the actual truth. And to go from the position of being a guru to that of being a disciple, it's not something that one wants to give up very easily. There's egoism is involved there. So, paramparas, they may be perpetuated, not on the base of truth, or on the base of egoism, or just like that, without any particular reason. Just like, why do you observe Deepavali? Well, I don't know, everyone, I don't know, when I grew up they did it, and still everyone's doing it, so makes us feel good, and most people, they don't even think, why do you do it? We're Hindus, that's why we do it. That's what Hindus do. But why? No idea. So, that's an idea, a very wide or loose tradition, and then there are specific traditions, just like we have Gaudiya Sampradaya within that, the Saraswat Sampradaya within that, we have our ISKCON following Prabhupada, and it looks like the way things are going, they're going to be, well, already, unofficially, within our movement, there are different understandings and approaches. Then we have in North India the Ramanandis, Ramayat, and so many groups, Kabir Panta, Radha Swami. These are what you would call traditional now, because they've been around some time. Then we have newer ones like Asharam and Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. And after some time that will be old, and then some other new one. And people think, well, it's old, so it must be good. which is... Well, in one sense, you could say it stood the test of time, but it doesn't mean it's right. So, we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he clearly and deliberately established a sampradaya. Even though he is what mundane scholars of religion would classify him as an ecstatic, means a person who's ecstatic. And he doesn't really teach much, or he's not very philosophical, but he's just in ecstasy, and he affects everyone by all his ecstasy. So an ecstatic, or a mystic. But actually he did sit down and deliberately instructed, specifically Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, in philosophy and practice. And even before sending Rupa and Sanatana to Vrindavan, he deliberately sent Lokanath, Bhugarabha to Vrindavan. After he sent Rupa and Sanatana, and he sent the devotees to Vrindavan with a specific aim. He told Sanatana Goswami that you study all these shastras and establish, well, we have the song, Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Sadharma Samsthapako. That was the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Go through the Shastra and establish what I am doing and teaching in a not very comprehensive way. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu generally didn't teach very comprehensively. But you find out from Shastra and everything and establish that comprehensively. And not only that, but the practice is also. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said observing festivals, observing Ekadashi, wearing tilak, all these different things. He gave the practices also. And he told Sanatan to look to Tirthodha, you find out all the lost place, the lost holy place. So he wanted to establish Vrindavan as the spiritual center of his sampradaya. And that was, and later on, Jiva Goswami, he took, apart from being a prolific writer, he took the role of an acharya in a very, practical way also, in as much as he got land given in his name, legal deeds, they had even in those days, legal deeds of land, and then so Radha Kund has come into the Gaudiya Sampradaya, it's officially there, and still the Babaji's at Radha Kund, generation after generation, it's a parampara battle going on. They're fighting with the local people who say, no, this is our land, get out of here, we want Radha Kund too, so our buffaloes can drink the water. And it's going on generation after generation. The Babaji's are saying, no, this was given by Akbar to the Gauriyas. This is our place. So Jiva Goswami took that role, and then he instructed Shamananda, Srinivas, Narottam, and sent them back to Bengal and Orissa with the specific aim of teaching, the preaching and teaching the actual Siddhanta. So in this way, there was, in Parampara, in the beginning of our Gauriya Sampradaya, there were deliberate efforts to establish the Sampradaya on with a firm basis of Siddhanta. And later there was the Kethuri Mahotsav, in which there are all different ideas floating around about who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Bhagavan, but Nityananda isn't, for instance. Or Gaura Nagari, and many different ideas were floating around. And at the Kethuri Mahotsav, it was all sorted out, and this is the orthodox Gauriya line, and then it went on from there. So it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and following him, they very deliberately established a tradition. And they knew it was something new, but at the same time they wanted to establish that it's not really new at all. It is the essence of the Vedas. It's only new in the same way that Krishna's appearance in this world might seem to be new. But Krishna is eternal. So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching is eternal, but the term given is anarpita. It was not given for a very long time. The teachings had become lost. There's that shloka in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is Kalena Lupta. What it begins like that? That I can't remember. In the beginning of the instructions to Rupa and Sanatan, there's that one verse from Chaitanya Chandodaya Natak. Have you got it there? Read it out. Vrindavaniyam rasakeli varta, the information about the pastimes, the rasa-lila of Vrindavan, or all the rasas of Vrindavan. Is it rasa or rasa? Rasa. Rasa, yeah. So, or the pastimes full of rasa in Vrindavan. Kalena. Kalena luptam nija shaktim ukta. So, anyway, you can't translate it line by line, but this means that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he instructed Rupa and Sanatan that which for a long time that had been, news of it had been lost. Kalena luptam. He empowered them. He empowered them to revive that, to instruct it. Yeah, then? Sancharya Rupena, by his Nidya Shakti, by his own potency, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu empowered them. Sancharyam? Yeah, go on. Okay, well, that's beyond my understanding. What's the translation given? Before the creation of this material world, the Lord enlightened the heart of Lord Brahma with the details of the creation and manifested the Vedic knowledge. In exactly the same way, in the Lord, that means Lord Chaitanya, being anxious to revive the pastimes of Lord Krishna, impregnated the heart of Rupa Goswami with spiritual potency. There's another verse also similar to that. Anyway, the point is that the Gauriyas, they were very, they made the point that this is not something new, although it may appear to be something new, but it is the actual essence of everything that's, that is in the Vedas. So, that's to be understood. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's analyzed. As far as I know, it may be analyzed earlier, but at least we find in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took different principles from different sampradayas. From Madhva, or from the different acharyas, from Madhva Acharya, he very much appreciated the total smashing of Mayavad and of the eternality of the Lord. Now, usually that's said, the eternality of the deity, in the deity form of the Lord. But there's also in Madhva's teaching the idea that the avatars, they're not just Narayan comes down and plays a pantomime for some time and then goes back, but the avatars are eternal. So I have to investigate more, but I believe that could be the actual meaning. The Lord's soul and body are not different, yeah. Yeah, all the forms of the Lord are eternal, not that they do some pantomime and have some... Right. Madhva hated that in Ramanuja, that he really hated that, saying the soul... He differentiated between the soul and the body of the Supreme Lord. So there's Madhva classified that with the Mayavadis. So he didn't like similar to Mayavad understanding. So from Ramanuja, what did he take? He took service to the devotees. What was the other thing he took from Ramanuja? Oh yeah, the smashing of karma and jnana, only bhakti. Then from Nimbarka, he took the importance of Radha and the gopis, serving in the mood of the gopis. Although Chaitanya, all these, well, especially this point, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu developed more and more. And what did he take from Vallabh? The spontaneity. That's one of them. And the other one I can't remember just now. You could find it. But anyway, the point I'm making here is that still trying to think of that other one, can't remember. The point I'm making is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took points from different sampradayas, and he didn't put himself so much in opposition, just like we're discussing Madhva and Ramanuja. Madhva, he was against Ramanuja's teachings. And we think of Mayavadis and Vaishnavas, but Madhva didn't think like that. He thought, this is the right line, and over there's all these Mayavadis. Like Advaita means this, Vishishta Advaita, Advaita. It's just the very sound of the word Advaita. He was... infuriate the followers of Madhva Acharya. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it may seem in some ways synthesizing, but not in the way that Ramakrishna, so-called Paramahamsa, that you just, everything's okay, everything's wonderful, everything's nice, not like that. He would take what is... He would emphasize the points that are acceptable within the highest understanding. Of course, I'm speaking in a sampradayic way here now. Yeah, you wouldn't find a follower of Ramanuja or Ramakrishna speaking like this. Naturally, I'm talking as we are taught within our sampradaya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the best things and he brought them to their fullness. And even the Mayavadis, he accepted to some extent. He didn't totally reject that there is oneness with the Supreme Lord, but not in the way that they think. Not absolute oneness. The difference is important. But if you say there's only difference, if you overemphasize the difference, then how can you have a relationship? Just like I can't have a relationship with a microphone because there are similarities also, that a microphone is a distinct entity and I'm a distinct entity, but there's not much more. You can't have a relationship. All right, let's come a little closer. I could have a relationship with a giraffe, but not to the extent you can have with God, because a giraffe is too much different from a human. So there should be a lot of sameness, but there has to be distinct difference also. But if there's too much difference, then where do you meet? Where's the love? I fell in love with a giraffe. Well, the way the world's going, you never know. It's not impossible. When you fed up with girls, then you go on to boys, and when you go on, then you never know. There's a word for that, but I don't know it. I don't need to know it. Sexual attraction to animals. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took to perfection, but then you may say that, well, yeah, we can integrate different things of different sampradayas and different ways of thinking. And it seems in our practical preaching that there's a very good case for that. Just like here in South India, for instance, if we chant a lot of shlokas, then people will be... Of course, that's not outside our Gaudiya tradition. But our Gaudiya tradition hasn't much emphasized on yajna, fire yajnas and chanting Vedic mantras. But if we do that in South India, people, it's not outside our sampradaya, and it will be much appreciated by many pious people here. One of my godbrothers in Bangladesh, he used to fast during Ramadan. He used to follow the fast. Of course, he didn't break it with, he didn't eat meat, but he used to fast because we're surrounded by Muslims and we'll respect their tradition, and it's not outside our teachings to do that. So he would do that. So how much should we or could we go outside our tradition? Have we got things to learn? Maybe we could learn things also. Srila Prabhupada said we should study the Catholic Church. What for? Well, at least for their how they organize. I mean, it's an amazing achievement in this Kali Yuga that they've had a worldwide church for 2,000 years in Kali Yuga. For a start, the worldwide communication was pretty poor way back then. Of course, worldwide... Well, it was mostly Europe and what's now called Asia Minor. And then as the Europeans spread, the church spread. But anyway, they had a worldwide church and it's still intact, it's still strong. It's going through a difficult period now. It's been through more difficult periods in the past. So they've obviously got something right in terms of organization, how to organize people on the basis of what we can loosely call religious belief. It's not an international organization like IBM or Hewlett Packard, which is based on profit and money and won't last. Despite predictions, is that a Nostradamus prediction that this Pope is the last one? Well, let's see. I may not live to see it. He might outlive me. But we can confidently predict that the Roman Catholic Church will outlast IBM, Hewlett Packard, Walt Disney Corporation, and so on. So Srila Prabhupada said to study the Catholic Church, how they organize, how they manage to do it, because they have managed, despite all kinds of upheavals, they've managed to keep their structure intact all these years. And like I say, they're going on and going on and going on. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had a very clear idea that he wanted to, he was told by Bhaktivinoda Thakur to establish Varnashram. So he went to South India and studied the different sampradayas. He studied many things, but he studied especially the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, and he didn't, not so much the Madhva Sampradaya. He also went to Udupi. And he understood, he took the practice of sannyas from the Ramanuja Sampradaya. So he also saw that it was previously in the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, which is now the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya. There's actually no, there appears to be no actual link with any of the three previous acharyas called Vishnu Swami, but it's practically the Vallabh Sampradaya. And there's no sannyas in the Vallabh Sampradaya. So he took from the Ramanuja Sampradaya. He saw the different principles. And he also, when he was living in Puri, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also spent a lot of time at the Govardhan Math, which is the math established by Adi Shankaracharya. It's a Shankara Math, and it's just a short walk from where he was staying, Bhaktivinoda's Bhakti Kuti. They're still both there. You can walk from Bhakti Kuti, you just walk down that Sadasan Math road, and then you're just a short walk away, just inside from Govardhan Math. So he spent a lot of time there. And he studied the teachings of Mayavad. And in there, he was in the library, not only Mayavad, they had a massive library with many, many different teachings he studied. And no doubt he also, either systematically or not systematically, saw their system of mutt set up. Later he established mutts. So in terms of mutt organization, those established by Shankaracharya, they're exemplary in the matter that they've, for over 1,000 years, they've had mutts with generation after generation, with sannyasis and brahmacharis and grihastas also attached to them. And they've been able to maintain their teaching. The sampradaya is meant for maintaining the teachings, both the philosophical and the actual practice of it. So he saw all of that and he established Gauriya Math. Actually, first of all, was Sri Chaitanya Math, and then that's like Rome, and then Gauriya Math in Kang, and then all of them. Like Sri Chaitanya Math is supposed to be like the Vatican, and then there are all the other churches and cathedrals, all the Gauriya Maths. So the point I'm making here is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself and all the different, the major acharyas, they also studied the teachings of other sampradayas, either to take something from them or to rebut them, because their teachings are very prominent at the time, just like Srila Prabhupada spoke a lot about modern science, which previous acharyas didn't do. One reason, there wasn't any modern science. Srila Prabhupada spoke a lot more about science, for instance, than he did about Buddhism. Shankaracharya spoke a lot about refuting Buddhism. But it was no longer much of an issue in the world when Srila Prabhupada was preaching, and modern scientific atheistic theories were. So Srila Prabhupada spoke a lot about that. So we see that different acharyas in different times, they tend to study different teachings and maybe take something from it. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur would often quote Madhusudan Saraswati to demonstrate some of the points he's making. Or he would just quote him and say, this is how this is to be understood. Whereas Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wasn't much of a fan of Madhusudan Saraswati, because of Madhusudan's, so many nice things he said, but at the end it's ultimately Mayavad. Well, I don't know. It's worth studying. I mean, that's the general understanding, but that saying, Krishnat param kimapi tattvam naham na jane, that's also from Madhusudan Saraswati. I don't know any higher truth than Krishna. So, requires some study. But who cares nowadays anyway? No one ever heard of Madhusudan Saraswati. But no doubt he was very influential in as much as he promoted bhakti, but at the end he sticks the knife in you. So, yeah, so I'm making the point that the different acharyas, they would study different sampradayas and different traditions, and maybe take something out of that and adopt it. And Christianity, as it seems, they did that in the Western world to a large extent. They adopted various what they call pagan festivals, just like Christmas is originally a pagan festival. They have no idea what day Jesus was born on, but there was a big festival and they're converting all these people to Christianity, and they're accustomed, just like people get, say you convert a Hindu into something, Christianity, and then tell them, no more Deepavali. Oh, I like Deepavali. Okay, have Deepavali and sing Hail Mary or something at the same time. So they Christianized it. They Christianized it. So is there scope for doing that in Krishna consciousness? How can we do that? Well, I'm not much in favor of it. Like, we have many temples in the West, they celebrate Christmas. I'm not in favor of that. Otherwise, the next thing, they'll have Christmas turkey. They maybe have it already, actually, vegetarian version. People ask, shall we serve soya meat? Well, I'm not much in favor. Let people be vegetarian. It's soya meat, then next thing is, well, why not real meat? I'm sure soya meat's not good for health anyway. Some artificially manipulate, they take some soy. I mean, you see this so-called soya meat, and you see a soya bean, and there's not much similarity. It's really been manipulated, modified, they call it. So, what should we learn? Well, we should learn inside our tradition. Just like we have our classes here, we don't have classes. Okay, folks, we've been teaching Gaurīya Siddhānta enough. It's getting a little boring. This morning we're going to teach something from the Greek Orthodox tradition. And then the next day we're going to have something from Sufi tradition. And let's make it more ecumenical and love all. But what happens, people just get confused. How are you going to learn what we have to? We have so many things to learn. How are you going to learn if you go this way, that way, another way? That's why there's a parampara, and you're trained in, I mean, whether you learn in Gaurīya parampara or Kashmir Shaiva parampara or Shaiva Siddhanta or Kabir Panta, whatever. There's a specific teaching which is to be imparted, and it's not just something so light that you can learn it, you can have a 2-week course and then, oh yeah, now I know everything. But there's so much to learn, and it's not just a matter of learning also, learn some shlokas, but it's a whole attitude and understanding which is to be imbibed. So we can't just let's teach something about this, teach something like that. We might, especially if we're in Tamil Nadu, we might, in the course of our teaching, teach something from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, but we'll show it in relation to our own teachings. Just like we may say that Ramanuja taught like that, but actually in Sri Sampradaya they themselves don't know anything nowadays. We're very, very difficult to find anyone who knows anything about. I mean, they've heard the name Ramanuja, and maybe that's about all. So that's good, nice for them. They've heard the name, but some people still, there's some training, some people not training, but. Or we may, if we go to a holy, like that, that's a better reason. I mean, we'll go to Divya Deshams of the Ramanuja Sampradaya, and we'll say that. We'll speak according to the local Stala Purana, that according to local tradition, this happened, and this and that. Ananda Mahaprabhu told me, he was with Srila Prabhupada in Tirupati, when Srila Prabhupada visited there, and then the local priests, they started to tell the story of the whole Tirupati story, how the Lord's in debt and all this kind of thing. And Prabhupada, he wasn't much interested. He just listened for a couple of minutes and he wasn't much interested in that. So, how much importance we give to that? True or not true, but it doesn't nourish pure devotion. That story. Just like we have also Brahma Vaivarta Purana story of Tulsi and her marriage to Shankarachura. But I don't know, I don't think any Vaishnava Acharya ever, or Gauriya Vaishnava Acharya have told this story, because it doesn't nourish pure devotion. So the Acharyas, they choose for us what we need to know. And then we're educated accordingly. Otherwise, Shastra is vast. No one can learn all the Shastras. It's not possible. That's why Vyasa made Vedanta Sutra. Krishna gave Bhagavad Gita. And you get everything, all the essence, all in one place. Otherwise, it's not possible to learn everything and know everything. So you have to educate in the essence. And the essence is also not a small thing. And to teach that is not a small thing. We find sometimes devotees, they've been practicing Krishna consciousness for years, they've been studying the books, studying teachings for years, and then some small thing comes up, someone says something, and they get all confused. Oh, the scientists gave evidence of evolution. All of a sudden, all their Shastric knowledge, all gone to hell. They're completely confused. So, does that mean that Gauriya Siddhanta is wrong and evolutionary theory as taught by the scientists is right? No, doesn't mean that at all. It just means that you're confused. That's all. That you didn't imbibe that. So what is taught in each parampara, in those that actually teach, there's not much teaching going on anywhere. In any sampradaya, still the young boys in the Madhva sampradaya, they're taught, but they're taught in the same way they were taught hundreds of years ago. They're taught Nyaya Sudha. So if they can just jump up to that Rishyashringa's place, what's that called? Where they have the Shankara Martis there. No, not Kala. Rishyashringa, it's the place of Sringeri. So they can try and hunt down one or two Mayavadis they can discuss with. But it's got no, then they can have fun. The Mayavadis, the Shankarites and the Mayavadis, the Madhvas, they can discuss like they did hundreds of years ago. But it's got no relevance to the religious life of people today. So some education is going on, a few Mayavadis here and there, a few Madhvas here and there. Maybe some Sri Vaishnavas. Mostly they're trained to be priests, that's all. Just learn the mantras and to say anything. So it's not vital to the intellectual needs of the people today so that they can be convinced of Krishna consciousness. But whatever education when there's a question of emperor education in the tradition, it has to be according to the tradition. And nowadays people may have many more questions because there's so many ideas just floating around, if you want to. So the teachers, they may have to also go outside the tradition to see what other people are saying. And there may not be any precedent within our sampradaya that we know of to answer that. Just like questions of cloning, for instance. Is it acceptable to clone human beings? Well, Duryodhana and his brothers, they seem like they're all cloned from one embryo, seems like. What about infanticide? Well, Vidur told Dhritarashtra, this boy, he's just born, this Duryodhana, better you kill him now. Unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you want to take it, Dhritarashtra didn't do so. But it's right there, he's Mahajan Vidura, Yamaraj. He told this boy he's going to cause someone, just kill him now. Indriya, the Maruts, yeah. 7 times 7. The feticide. Abortion. Attempted abortion in the third trimester. Right? I don't know if... Actually, that's interesting because generally the demigods, they just give birth immediately. Somehow or other, this one was in the womb for a long time. So many questions may come up like this. And if you start thinking about it, if you start looking with a critical eye, you may find so many questions. And people may come to you with so many questions. And you have to answer. But generally within a sampradaya, not everyone can understand everything. And if we all sit around trying to understand everything, who's going to cook the bhog for Gaur Nithai? And while we're sitting around wondering, we're all starving to death. So, there are some practical considerations also. So, we may say, well, Prabhupada said this. And just, okay. For us, at least, matter closed, Just, all right, Prabhupada said this, and for us it's acceptable. But if someone has so many questions and they don't accept it, then don't come here. If you're not satisfied, don't come in this sampradaya. There has to be some faith. We talk about blind faith, but to some extent, all faith, until we have realization, all faith has to be blind because we don't know exactly. Actual understanding is pratyaksha. Pratyaksha gavamang dharmyam susukam kartam abhyata. Actual experience is the reality. But that may also be deceptive as long as we're conditioned. Just like people think, that there's so many people, they're convinced that so-and-so, he said the end of the world is coming, so sell everything you have and jump in a drink poison, and people, there are instances of that. So that's blind faith, but they have a strong feeling. So we have to, if we're going to make some progress, if we're going to pursue the truth, we can't just remain forever an agnostic. If you say, well, we can't know anything for sure, therefore not try for anything, and then you end up ahara nidra bhaya maitun, that's all. Then there's nothing left. Kimanyat kama haitukam. There's nothing left but lust, material desire. So one has to make a leap of faith. And that should be somewhat reasonable, but you can't wait forever to make it also. And it might be that after making it, you find that, well, wait a minute, something's not right here. And you may make another leap somewhere else. I was reading about one of these... Black Muslim, Malcolm X and one of his cohorts. This is in America in the 1960s. Some Muslims started converting to Islam. So one of them, he had a second conversion from Shia to Sunni Islam. It was like I know there was one Russian sannyasi. He was within the Gauriya Math. He joined ISKCON, didn't like it, went to the Gauriya Math, took sannyas, and I was talking to him and said that, well, if you find something better, we should go on to it. And I thought, well, what's better than this? And there's theism, Narayana, and Radha Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Theologically, we can't say anything beyond this. But he ended up in the Madhva Sampradaya. Gave up sannyas also. So, because he's thinking it's like more correct according to Shastra. And I said to him that, well, if you go there, what are you going to do? You're not a Madhva Brahmin. They'll just tell you to chant Harinam because that's the yoga dharma. And then you might as well come to the Gauriya Sampradaya because this is our speciality. And I met him later and I said, so what did they do? He said, they told me to chant Harinam. So, what else did I have to say? So many things. I had some ideas, but I'm just going all over the place here. Not very systematic. Oh, yeah. The opposite to the idea, or not exactly opposite, but maybe a protest against this idea of you just learn within a fixed paradigm is the modern idea of, well, you learn many things about many things and then you make up your own mind, and that's supposed to be the ideal of a modern liberal upbringing. You just expose your children to everything and then you let them decide for themselves. Well, that's not a very good idea, to expose children to everything. You want to expose them to all the pornography and you want to expose them to seeing the victims of the recent bombings in Boston. If anyone listens to this lecture later, they'll wonder what I'm talking about, because in the meantime there'll have been bombings in so many other places. But in the news at present is the Boston bombings. So you want to show them all that? Show them all the nastiness of the world? Is it really a good idea to do that? We really want to take the kids and show them that, we tell them the slaughterhouse is not nice. You want to take them there and show them that? I don't think so. So, this idea, you just expose people to many different things. In a liberal education, they teach all different kinds of things. So no one really knows anything very well, but then if they go to higher education, then they get so super specialist that they only know some tiny little thing and they don't really know much about anything else. So it's a challenge in the modern age in preaching and teaching Krishna consciousness, well, to accommodate and present Krishna consciousness within this atmosphere. Information age, or so much information out there, so many different ideas. Can be very confusing. One way to get around that is not to teach very much at all. Just say chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But that's a cop-out. So, we have a specific system of teaching based on Shastra. This is authority. The modern way of thinking is that, well, people have studied different things and they've come to different conclusions and therefore we accept it. But Brahm Pramad Vipralipsa Karanapatav, Shastric analysis is that conditioned souls have the defects of a tendency to make mistakes, to be illusioned, to cheat and to have imperfect senses. So any knowledge, even if it's acquired by generations of intelligent people, is subject to be mistaken. One thing I realized from watching some documentary about astronomy recently, well, I already had some idea, but it became very clear to me that, as one of the astronomers who was speaking there said, we really don't know very much about the cosmos. And one thing that became clear is that although they have systems by which they think they can measure the distance of planets and quasars and all different things out there, what's actually going on is they're looking at the sky, they have a two-dimensional vision. And they can't really say whether something, how far away anything is. They have their theories, like there's this red shift, and then they see things which seem, yeah, doesn't fit their theory, even their basic epistemology is up to question. So basically, they're looking at a cartoon. Nowadays, cartoons are three-dimensional, but when I was a kid, cartoon means two-dimensional. So they're looking at a two-dimensional view of the universe, and they really can't know very much about it. If something comes very close, then they have a three-dimensional view. And close in astronomical terms means within, you know, 1,000 light years, but I'm talking about within less than 100,000 miles, or maybe even less. Which that's not close even. That's like in your pocket practically, in astronomical terms. So we accept as an axiom that we, not only in Krishna consciousness, but any religious system, they accept scripture as being axiomatically, inherently, unquestionably authoritative. That may come up to question also. Buddhists and Jains question the Vedas. Many people questioned the religious scriptures of the Christians. We don't know how many people questioned those of Islam. Usually they don't survive long enough to do so, or they're too afraid to openly do so. But we accept certain works as being authoritative. That what is there, that is the authority. But even then, if we finally study, questions may come up. And then again, the acharyas have to solve that, just like we find in the second canto of Bhagavatam. We find Shukadev says that idang Bhagavatam nama purana brahma samitam. Then dvaipayano. Oh, what's that? Not, there's two verses, and it's in the first canto there. Dvapara. Anyway, the point is that dvaparado, look that up, idang bhagavatam nama, it comes up in the first canto and again in the second canto. Adhitavan dvaparado pitur dvaipayanaraham. He says that I was taught this Srimad Bhagavatam dvaparado, which means in the beginning of Dwarapa Yuga, by my father, who is known as Dvaipayana. It's the idang bhagavatam nama. This bhagavata is the purana, which is the summation of all the Vedas. So what does that mean? And that goes against everything else that's said, because Vyasa, by his very role, is to come at the end of Dwarapa Yuga, not the beginning of Dwarapa Yuga. So Jiva Goswami says that this means, just like sometimes the end is taken as the beginning, depending on your place of perspective. Okay. If he had said dvaparante, there'd have been no problem. He said dvaparado. Why? We don't understand. But we're not going to, we don't find that it's such a great anomaly that we're going to throw out the whole Srimad Bhagavatam because of that. So if we study finely, actually the more you know, then the more questions may arise. But you have to keep your compass that this is Shastra, this is given by the Acharyas. Now the liberal thinkers or people who say that, well, we can't really trust anything, they say, well, that's a kind of self-deception, it's blind faith. But then again, you have to follow some authority if you're going to make some progress, because you can be a liberal thinker, you can be sit on the fence all your life, but you'll never go anywhere. We are going on with the faith or the conviction that beyond this whole world of eating, sleeping, mating and defending, birth, death, old age and disease, there is an ultimate good. Otherwise you're just stuck. Then you're condemning yourself to be a frog in the well. We can't say anything more than this well, because we know nothing else but this well. And no one else can know anything else. Someone comes from outside the well, an adventurous young frog comes back and says, there are so many things outside the well. Well, I didn't see it. How can I believe it? I didn't see it. So we are all frogs in a well, but we believe someone who came from outside the well and says there's something beyond it. Because anyway, it seems to make sense, doesn't it? Is it that all of existence is just eating, sleeping, mating, defending, birth, death, old age and disease? Why is there... You say, well, we don't believe in God, but you should be good. Well, the atheists will also protest against the Boston bombings. Why? If everything is all chemicals, then what does it matter? Some chemicals got thrown on some other chemicals, and one chemical, which was an intact human body, suddenly became a non-intact human body. The legs got separated. It's only some chemicals, that's all. Then why are the atheists protesting? They also believe in good and bad. That's a metaphysical principle. It's not a physical principle. There's nothing in any combination of chemicals which you can call good or bad. You can't say that water is better than heavy water. Well, yeah, it's good or bad. Well, if you drink water, it's supposed to be good for you. If you drink heavy water, not recommended. H2O2. That's good for in nuclear reactors cooling or something like that. So it's good or bad. You may say, yeah, water is good. Heavy water is not. From what perspective? Then they'll say it's all relative. Water is good for you to drink and heavy water is good for cooling nuclear reactors. But what's ultimately, they'll define it in terms of human beings. Why? 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 According to you, the human body and mentality, it's just a combination of chemicals. That Krishna says in Gita also, that why? If you think that the body is born and it just dies and there's no soul, then there's also nothing to lament. either way you take it, there's nothing to lament. So we are... We go along, even though there may be questions. There may be explanation. Another example, that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj several times says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he danced, the whole earth tilted. Do you take it literally or is it poetic? We know that Shastra also talks poetically. Well, we don't mind. You can take it either way you like. It doesn't bother us that much, you know. You say the earth tilted and then, well, that would have gone out of orbit or something. I don't know, whatever. What does it mean that the earth tilted anyway? But I don't know. We study Chaitanya Charitamrita not as a scientist. Not as a mundane scientist. So, many awkward questions can arise. We should be ready for that. If we're actually going to preach Krishna consciousness widely, then we can expect that many questions will arise. Last time I was here, Jayadvaita Swami told me there was a book about called How to Read the Bible. He suggested I see that. It's written by a Jew who was a Harvard professor teaching biblical studies. And then he retired and went to live in Jerusalem. And he goes through, I just read a few chapters. It's a huge book, but it's more or less the same each time. They'll study different parts of the Bible and show how, according to scholarship, it's not true. Or different assumptions about it are not true. Just like the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. That's supposed to be written by Moses. But it's accepted by scholars that because the language is different, the statements are different, that they're probably different scholars. And they say, this part is written by so-and-so, this part is written by... They identify scholar A, scholar B, scholar C, and so on. And then they get into the story of Noah and the flood, and they say, pointing out that long before the accepted date of this being written, there are already flood traditions in Babylonia and all over the world. So in this way, they show that, well, maybe the Bible's not so God-inspired, it's man-inspired anyway. But then, so I read three chapters, and then I went to the end. I said, okay, I got the gist of it. I went to the end, and then his conclusion is that, well, okay, so now we understood that the Bible's probably not true in the way that we thought it would, but still we should accept it, because if we don't, there'll be no Judaism. He's a Jew, not a Christian. So he thought there was something inherently good in being a Jew, without any really good reason, but just, you know, we're Jews and that's it. That's all. That was his whole reasoning to offset everything else he'd said in the book. So, if we are to preach, if we are to take up the challenge of preaching Krishna consciousness very widely, which means that we're going to have to do more than having holy festivals, throwing colors on each other, and going to interfaith meetings, we're going to have some serious discussion about what is actually the truth and convince people. And many people may like to come and throw colors on each other as some kind of fun, but that doesn't mean that, and they may become favorable to the Krishna conscious movement for doing so, but they're not going to commit themselves to surrender to Krishna unless they're convinced to do so, or even if they do so sentimentally. They're not going to stay on the path unless they're going to be convinced to do so. So we're going to have to take up these questions. Otherwise, it can be devastating. Just like there are many cases of people brought up as Kirtanananda, Keith Ham, his early life. He was raised as a Bible-thumping Christian. Then he went to university. And that was the end of his Bible-thumping, because he got exposed to all kinds of different ideas which he'd never thought of before. And they torpedoed his faith in all that he believed in, because there were no answers. The priest couldn't give any answers to what he said. So we're going to have to be able to give answers. That is required. Otherwise, either people lose faith in it altogether, or they do a Vatican II on it. It means 1965, I believe it was, the Roman Catholic Church decided that evolutionary theory is okay, which means all the infallible popes prior to that were wrong, and all the infallible popes after that were right. I don't know how exactly they do it, but they thought that evolutionary theory can be accommodated within Roman Catholic Orthodox teachings. So that way they took the heat off. They thought the pressure on them from evolutionists, but it didn't really help them much, because the evolutionists still said, well, you can accommodate evolutionary theory within your teachings, but we don't need your godism within our teachings. It's not required. So they didn't really make any gain. They lost their caste, and they're still hungry. So we can't be... Srila Prabhupada used to quote, there's a Bengali saying, I never heard it said in Bengali. The mullah goes no further than the mosque. Means the mullah, he lives next to the mosque, he goes to the mosque, he comes back, and that's all he knows. He goes in the mosque and he teaches according to the Quran, he comes back and he knows nothing else. And that's all. But we, if we're going to spread Krishna consciousness in the world, then we just can't be in our temple and that's it. We just teach among our own group. We have to, be aware of various ideas that are going on in the world and present them according to Gauriya Siddhanta. You may say, well, maybe we'll find something which defeats Gauriya Siddhanta. What are you going to do with them? Then you're in trouble, from our perspective. Then you're in trouble. But I doubt it, actually. Because Gauriya Siddhanta ultimately deals with transcendence, which is not achinta kaluje bhavana tangs tarkena yojiyat. Tad achintyasya lakshanam. Our teachings are actually, they deal with the achintya. So anything in this world, any man-made theory, it's not fit to study Gauriya teachings with. You can't study via that. Our process from the beginning is a transcendental process. And at some level, we may verify that with our in a very primary way, we can verify that with our sensual perception and our reasoning. But ultimately, it goes beyond all that. There's spiritual logic and spiritual experience and spiritual understanding. In going outside our tradition, we may find others who are going outside that are there, confronting the same questions, but we have to be a little careful. Just like, for instance, we may agree with Christians on various things, just like Christians, many of them, are anti-abortion. They believe that God created the world, not that it evolved from nothing, or just came into being out of nothing. But we should be a little careful mixing with them, because often their theories are based on just dogma without any proper understanding of what is the nature of life, what is the nature of God. Just like you'll find there are both Muslims and Christians who say, no, evolution is bogus and God created everything. And the Christians say, and the conclusion is the Bible. The Muslims say the conclusion is the Quran, but nothing that they say leads you to that conclusion. They say that, okay, they show all what they purport to be evidence that evolution is bogus, and the Quran says that God created everything, okay, believe in the Quran. But then why? Just because it says so in the Quran. The refutation of a wrong theory does not establish another theory, it only refutes one theory. To establish another theory, then you may say, okay, according to the Quran, this is a possible alternative. But it's not in and of itself establishing a theory. Just like there's so many stupid Hindus, actually many of them are educated people, who they hear this Nayak, what's his name? Muslim? Zakir Nayak, who purports to show how the Vedas are all bogus, and then they convert to Islam. But even if all his arguments were right, which they're not, and I think any one of us could just very easily cut into pieces, but the problem is, if you cut into pieces philosophically, they'll cut you to pieces literally. That's the problem. That's why we don't. Not only you, they'll blow up our temples, and you know, it's difficult to have a discussion with people who don't take no for an answer. So then the Hindus, they convert. Oh, he's shown us. But why? Even if all he says is right, which is not, still it doesn't mean that you should become a Muslim. So we should be careful when we're going outside other, if looking outside other traditions, to what we take, what we don't take. We have to have a very good knowledge filter. That means we can take everything in, but how we understand it. We don't filter things out, but we categorize them and understand them. Let's see, according to Shastric understanding, what is right and what is not right. Even in taking from Vedic tradition, I mean, I saw some video of some Arya Samaji, who you can say some kind of Vedic tradition. And he, I didn't watch the whole video, but there was a video of him with one of Zakir Naik's main men, and it said on the verbiage that goes with the video that he completely, the Arya Samaji defeated the follower of Zakir Naik. But even then, in the way he defeated him, we have to be careful also, because we don't end up with Arya Samaj Siddhanta, which is again offensive, not a proper understanding of the Vedas. So we're talking about going outside our tradition. First of all, we have to be very well fixed in understanding our own tradition and convinced of that. And then we can see about, it's required to go outside our tradition to meet different challenges, but we have to be very much fixed in our own understanding. So it's a tremendous task to educate devotees at all levels. I mean, you have that experience that, you know, to educate, but already they've got so many, practically everything they've learned since they were born and even before that is all wrong. And to educate them in actually the right thing, it's a tremendous task. And what to speak of going out and meeting different followers of different paths. We have a lot of work to do in education, there's no doubt. Some people are not very educable. That's also, they may be nice devotees, but not everyone's going to be a very great scholar or any such thing. They should at least know some basic things. But that's also required, that there are some devotees who are at least specialized in some things, so they can go among different groups of people and discuss with them. And Krishna gives the intelligence also, but the certain amount of education is needed. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he cautioned some devotees who they wanted to go and preach to scientists, and Prabhupada said, well, make sure you're properly prepared. Otherwise, if you don't know what you're talking about, that'll become obvious and you'll just look like fools. And instead of preaching, it'll be the opposite effect. So you should have some idea. If you're going to go and preach to scientists about science, then you should know your stuff. I have some ideas for preaching to scientists, but you don't need to know science. You can just ask some basic questions. That's also possible. And say from the outside, I'm not a scientist. But can you just explain, if it's science, why different scientists with the same information available to them, and they're both being educated in science, come to completely different conclusions? For instance, I mean, the very fact that there are scientists who believe in evolution and others who don't suggests that science is a belief system. It's not what you call science. Because if it was actually science and it was also very scientific, then with the same information and the same scientific training, everyone should come to the same conclusion. But they don't. Which just goes to show, They say religion is just a belief system. Well, science is also. Otherwise, you wouldn't have difference. And they say, well, those people don't know what they talk about. Well, I don't know. I'm a layman. That's what, if I go to the Catholic Church, they'll say the Protestants know what they're talking about. And it's just the same thing. How do I know? They say, then you have to study. Well, that's what we say with religion too. You come and you study, then you can understand. So as far as the layman's concerned, science is just another belief system. So like that, in that way you can discuss. But if you want to get into detailed discussion, then you really have to know what you're doing. So, we're in the situation of very much having to establish, in one sense, we're having to establish a tradition again, as Krishna did with Arjuna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did with Rupa and Sanatan, spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. Even here in Tamil Nadu, no one knew anything about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Maybe at Bellore, someone went to North India and put on the Gopuram Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, but I don't think anyone in Bellore knows who they are until you went there and did a program. Maybe they took Prabhupada's books and they know a little bit. But we're very much in the situation of all over the world having to establish a tradition. People don't know about it. And at least in terms of most of the world, it's not a question of that the tradition became lost, but it was never there, at least within what we know as history. Of course, it may have been there, but it's become so covered over. The Vedic culture, there appears to be very good evidence, of course it's covered up, of the assertion that Srila Prabhupada made that Vedic culture was all over the world. But it's all been covered up and destroyed, actually, by Christianity. And so we're practically in the situation of having to establish a whole new tradition and its teachings and its understanding in the face of overwhelming opposition. Not nowadays much direct opposition, but the whole way of life, the whole attitude to life, the whole understanding of everything is so very different from what we have to establish. It might appear to be almost impossible. But I don't think it's impossible, because by Krishna's grace, anything's possible. But definitely, if we're going to do that, it's going to have to be a lot more than having holy festivals. By this, I don't mean sacred festival. I mean it's becoming popular now. People throwing colored water, squirting colored water at each other, and actually, it's going to have to be more than chanting Harinam also. Along with Harinam, there's going to have to be a lot of preaching and educating. It's going to have to be there. So, within our own group, we have to teach according to our own parampara, very clearly understand what that is, and impart that to others, and impart the understanding of how to impart that to others also. Hare Krishna! Any question about this, please? It's a tradition when I come here that devotees get a late breakfast due to long classes. I think let the Gurukul Brahmacharis whose schedule is getting spoiled, let them go and take prasadam. Yeah, anything? All right, speak. Yeah, I'll repeat it. The essential thread in parampara, he's following the tradition of not speaking very loudly in the presence of your guru. You should speak softly. So I'll repeat it. So the essence of parampara, the essential thread is the truth, yes. Practice is based on the truth, yeah. Often Srila Prabhupada quoted from Mahabharata, Tarko Pratishta Shutiyo Vibhinna Na Savrishe Yasya Matang Nabhinnam. The truth cannot be established simply by discussion or argument. Even the Shrutis, the Vedic statements, appear to say different things. And all the Vedic philosophers, the rishis, they become rishis by having a different opinion to everyone else. Then, therefore, the conclusion is one should follow a Mahajana. Yeah. We have to know the truth, but we have to learn it from a Mahajan. So ultimately, it's Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. One gets, it's ultimately, it's mercy that we can get what is the truth and we can recognize that. Like I said, you have to make a leap of faith. But it's not that it's blind faith. One has to always apply one's intelligence. So, those who are gurus and teachers, they also teach us how not to get cheated. If an actual guru will teach us how that even he, the guru, will not be able to cheat you. So later on, if the guru tries to cheat you, you'll know now he's cheating me because of what he taught you. If you're actually taught by a proper guru, then even he cannot cheat you. If you're taught by a proper guru, and then all of a sudden the guru says to his female disciple, you are just like Radha, I am just like Krishna. And now we should have an intimate relationship. And if the disciple has been properly taught, they'll say, forget it. You're bogus. You're cheating. So one has to accept a guru, but questioning also. And that's why the system is there. Don't immediately accept. In some places it said, if you get a bona fide guru, you should accept immediately. There's no question of right time, place, or circumstance. But generally, it's said to you should study and see. Does what they say, is that commensurate with Shastra and with your own understanding? That's also there. One has to apply one's own intelligence. At the same time, one has to understand the limitations of one's intelligence and also understand that intelligence is a gift given by God. So exactly how to define what are the limits, that's not it may not be exactly definable. But we see if the guru is following the Shastra, following the previous acharyas, if he has something just completely new, then it's highly doubtful. He takes his authority from the previous acharya. You see, his, by his activities, by his teachings, it's very clear that Srila Prabhupada is a completely God-realized person. So if we follow him, we know that that's proper. We can trust that who is teaching according to Prabhupada, that's going to be good for us. Yeah, you're going to ask the question. Srila Prabhupada is our highest authority within ISKCON, in one sense, yeah. But he would always point to the previous acharyas and to Shastra. And he's the highest authority because he represents all of these authorities. Ultimately, the highest authority is Krishna himself. Yeah. When there's a disagreement on topic, then we'll fall back on Prabhupada quotes. There'll be agreement and disagreement. Therefore, we have to understand Prabhupada's mission, teachings. My understanding, and there are other understandings, is that Srila Prabhupada, a lot of what he taught in practice was because he was dealing with people who had no idea of Vedic culture whatsoever. And that was not necessary. The behavioral standards, he said, were not necessarily meant to be forever. Just like Srila Prabhupada had women go out on book distribution in the West. But he said that he wanted that the daughters of his disciples, they should learn how to cook and to clean and to be chaste. He didn't say they should learn to go on book distribution. He had a different idea for that. So there's one example. So many devotees in ISKCON say, see, Prabhupada engaged his women disciples as photographers and book distributors, not as GBCs or Tamil presidents, interesting. So we should go on and do the same. And others say, no, that wasn't meant, Prabhupada didn't say that should be the standard forever. So in this way, disagreements come. It's interpreting Prabhupada's actions. And many strange things come out of that. Both the sides are quoting Prabhupada, therefore we have to understand. Again, we have to understand what is Srila Prabhupada's ultimate purpose. And devotees will quote, well, Krishna consciousness is above any material consideration. Therefore, for instance, women can do exactly the same thing as men. But Prabhupada would often quote that women have babies, men don't. The difference is, there are certain differences which you can't change. So why don't we have joint communal showers then, if men and women are all the same? Why not? If we're all just spiritual, we're all completely on the spiritual platform, then why bother with any restrictions? The restrictions are there because of the perverse attraction between male and female bodies. So if you say we're above them, then have joint communal showers. That's the ultimate, that's a technique in logic. You take the argument to its ultimate extreme. Then there should be no problem with that. It may come to that also in the course of realization of devotees. Already we see, I saw on the cover of Bhakti Godhead magazine a few years ago, it showed the Guru Kuli's bus tour or something, and all young men and women, all in a group, all completely mixed up. So already they came to that level of understanding, that there's no distinction based on gender. Although I don't know how many of them are chanting 16 rounds, but they have this high realization. What is this called? This is called Sahajya. Where you pretend you're on a very high level, or you imagine yourself to be on a very high level, therefore you don't follow the rules, because you think you're above them. But you're not above them, you never came up to them. In the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you make a fuss out of the whole thing. Are we diluting the teachings by doing that? Yes. But that's another topic altogether. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Gauriya Parampara ki jai. Sri Sri Gauranitai ki jai. Hare Krishna.